Welcome to Imagining the Past, the 2025 season. I'm Greg Johnston. HNSA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognises their continuing connection to the land, water, and community. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. In this series of podcasts, we'll be hearing from the winners of the ARA Historical Novel Prize 2024, both adult and CYA categories, and other authors of historical fiction. The ARA Historical Novel Prize is now the richest genre-based literary award in Australasia, a staggering $150,000 divided between the adult and CYA categories. The Historical Novel Society Australasia promotes the reading, writing, and publishing of historical fiction through our biennial festivals and online programs. Imagining the Past is commercial-free. HNSA is a volunteer-run, not-for-profit organisation, and we can only continue to produce the podcast with your support. Please consider making a tax-deductible donation through our secure website, www.hnsa.org.au. All contributions, great or small, are greatly appreciated. David Shields' manuscript for Blind Dragon won the 2024 Elizabeth Jane Corbett Mentorship Contest. The young adult novel is set in 17th century Japan, rich in details and the drama of the period. I thought it would be interesting to hear what brought David to the mentorship contest, how it proceeded, and what he felt the manuscript gained from this process. Welcome, David Shield, to Imagining the Past.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So maybe start off by telling us a bit about yourself, what you do and where you live.
So I currently live in Brisbane. I have lived in Japan for 10 years prior to moving back home. I currently work as a conference interpreter for medical topics. So I go and interpret for Japanese doctors when they come out here to talk about fun things like tuberculosis and cancer treatment. I'm also president of the Australia-Japan Society for Queensland, and I'm currently vice chair of the Queensland Writers' Centre Board. And in between all of that, I'm a classically trained Japanese koto musician.
Right, well, we'll get to your Japanese interest in a while, but when did you first start to think about writing amongst all of that?
I've always written. I started trying to write novels when I was in high school. We won't ever look at them. They're stored on a double password protected file to never see the light of day. And that USB is going to be buried with me or in a Viking funeral, they're so bad. But I've always written. It's been a hobby, a saving grace, sometimes my only moments of sanity. It took quite a few attempts to write anything I thought was any good. When I moved back in 2019, I started getting serious about writing. I had a novel which was good, but it needed a lot of work. And when I tinkered with it while I was doing a master's of Japanese interpreting. And then when I graduated, I went to QWC and they helped me beat it into shape. And it's actually going into publication in February.
Oh, wow.
And that's my dad's an evil sorcerer through Hawkeye. So it's not historical fiction. It's middle grade fantasy.
Is that the kind of genre that you were writing before? Have you written other things in that genre before?
It's my primary genre is actually middle grade fantasy. Historical fiction came later to the party.
And what drew you to historical fiction and in particular young adult historical fiction?
I often say I never set out to write young adult historical fiction. An idea for a historical fiction came to me and it just wouldn't let me go until I wrote it. It didn't give me a choice in the matter. It would just not shut up in my head until it was done. Somehow that morphed into YA. That wasn't the objective when I started. I had set out to write adult, and it just didn't come out that way. It came out as a YA. I can't really explain it in any other way of just happenstance that that's what happened in the end.
Do you read historical fiction?
I do. I'm a big fan of... I can see the book covers in my head. What's his name? Christian Jacques, and his Ramesses series are some of my favourites. I have read the works of Colleen McCulloch. I am a fan of historical novels as well, though. So I've read a lot of the classics written in sort of the 1500s and earlier. And I just like that period of writing. I would never try and copy it. I think it's definitely dull, but I love the insights it gives you into another time period.
I'm just wondering what you kind of think of the term young adult, because I was, you know, just leading up to doing this interview, I was thinking about how, you know, is a book like a novel like The Name of the Rose a young adult fiction, because it's, you know, its primary narrator, Adso, is a young adult.
I don't really think whether it's the narration makes a difference to whether it's YA or not. To me, a YA comes down to the themes and the demographic you're marketing it at, and to an extent it comes down to the age of the main protagonist, I think. But it also comes down to the themes. If you're shooting for YA, there's sort of a... You can't really go Game of Thrones level of gore and that sort of thing. That's not YA. That's thoroughly adult right there. I think YA is you can start to deal with a higher level of violence and a more tricky themes, but you can't really go all out. But if you don't have any sort of depth, or the, not depth is the wrong word, but that sort of dealing with emotions and dealing with the thoughts of growing up, if you don't have anything like that in it, then it's probably going to verge down more towards middle grade.
But the look, I agree with you, but I think it's quite a problematic definition, because, like, again, returning to The Name of the Rose, it's a Bildungsroman, because Adso grows up, he's, you know, just on the cusp of adolescence, he's learning all of these things, he changes dramatically within the course of the story, so it really is about a young man growing up. So the fact that it deals with these incredibly adult kind of world, and he's the naive kind of protagonist moving through that world trying to solve the problems in the same way that William is kind of almost irrelevant to me, because it does feel there's this element of it being young adult.
And, like, to me, in all honesty, I think the definition of young adult these days is so unclear that nobody really knows. Same with the definition of what is middle grade anymore. Who knows? What is new adult? I've got no idea.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there is like a lot of new terms.
Yeah, and it's just so nebulous that it's very... When I was in high school, young adult was sort of... was Harry Potter and all of that. That was young adult. Whereas now all of those sorts of work is sort of being classified as middle grade. So I think young adult as a term is just in a constant state of evolution.
Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your manuscript for Blind Dragon. Where did you kind of get the initial ideas for it, and what were your initial ideas?
So I was, this requires a little bit of background on Japanese history. So the koto, which is the harp-like instrument I play, is a classical instrument. It was introduced into Japan in around the year 900. And when the Warring States period of Japan ended in 1603, it's sort of solidified under a government, and that government engaged in a lot of social change and a lot of social stability. And one of the things they did was they mandated that to be a music teacher, you had to be blind. And they weren't going around blinding people, you understand. It was a case of a very early form of social security, of if you were blind, you had a job. And there was other options other than just music teacher, but it was a way that blind people could interact and be part of society in that period of time and have a career. So I heard about this from my own teacher, because I learn in Japan, and I was fascinated with that concept of what would it be like to have this occupation predicated on disability. I suffer from a vision problem as well, so that's a topic which is a bit near and dear to my heart. And then it sort of morphed from that idea into a political thriller set in that time period, and this time which there was a lot of social engineering going on, but that wasn't completely stable either. And it is that early 1600s period of Japanese history is actually quite fascinating from a sociological point of view.
So how did you find out about the Elizabeth Jane Corbett mentorship program?
To be honest, I think I saw it on Instagram. I know a few other people who write historical fiction up here in Queensland, but it popped up on my radar, I think, the last time it was run. However, the manuscript just wasn't in a shape to be entered into anything then. It still was partway through its final editing. So I waited, and I think but when I found it, there's only a few days left to run. So I figured, no, pass on it this time, and I waited till it came around again, and then I entered this time. And I just had it on my calendar of enter this, and I was more surprised than anyone that I won it.
Well, that's a congratulations anyway. So what shape was your manuscript in when you entered it? Like, I think a lot of people, you know, when they're looking at entering a competition like this, they're not sure what level it has to be at.
Mine, so the full manuscript was complete. There was no additional writing required. It was done. It had been through a couple of rounds of structural edits. It had had a full copy edit done on it.
So who did those edits for you?
The copy edit was done by a gentleman called Ian Matheson. He's a copy editor up here in Brisbane. He does a very good job. I get a lot of my stuff done with him. The structural editing was done by a couple of my friends from the Queensland Writers' Centre. Just people and acquaintances, there. It also has been through a couple of subject matter checks. There's a tea ceremony teacher who lives up in the Gold Coast hinterland here, and she's a massive expert on Japanese architecture and Japanese food. Though I kind of wish she'd told me sugar wouldn't be imported in Japan for a few years after I set this earlier, because I had to go back and change all of the food at one point. So it has been through a fairly extensive historical check as well, because there's just some areas I'm not an expert in.
So what's your writing process? Do you like to plan what you're doing and then write, or do you just like to run with it?
I'm a bit of a hybrid. I will plan the world setting of anything I write first, and I will make the characters beforehand. And then I usually just let them go after that, and they write the book themselves. With Blind Dragon, I had no idea who the villain was until I'd written 2/3 of the book. I had to actually go back and make it a bit clearer early on after I'd gotten that far, and I realized, oh, wait, that's the villain. So it really, I'm a very organic writer. For me, the trick is I have a couple of CDs for each thing I write. So with Blind Dragon, it's really easy. I have just so many discs of koto music and stashed on hard drives that I just put that into my headset and I just start writing to music. But every world I make, I assign a couple of soundtracks to. And whenever I want to write that, I just put that soundtrack on and it just works.
So do you enjoy that first draft process and then having to go back and, you know, as you've said, go back and rewrite things once something else has become evident?
Very much so. Like, for me, the best bit is writing the first draft. I don't do as much structural editing as you might think. Usually my first drafts are, on a structural perspective, fairly clean. My issue is I'm really a little bit blind. I have a rare vision disorder where I see double of things almost constantly. So I can't actually see commas. So I basically am totally reliant on my copy editors to bash out all of the things that I just don't see in a manuscript. So that's a time and consuming and very painful exercise for those poor people and for me of listening to them saying that they need to add another bucket full of commas.
Do you not use Grammarly or an editing program?
I have tried. I have unfortunately found that Grammarly makes it worse. My instinctive nature when I'm writing for commas tends to be more accurate than Grammarly is. And then when I put Grammarly on, it just throws the whole thing out of whack. I've had better luck with some other software. Perfected I found to be better. But yeah, still, particularly with all the Japanese idiosyncrasies, when I write something like Blind Dragon, it's really not as helpful as you might think.
So what form did the mentorship program take with Wendy Dunn? How did all of that work?
Well, for us, obviously with her being in Melbourne and me being up here, it was always online with us. So I gave her the whole manuscript and she...
How many words is the whole manuscript?
94,000. And she went through all of it, basically, and she pointed out a few... And particularly in the opening page, she made some really good critiques there. And she basically just did another structural edit on it, which was really good. She pointed out just not big structural things. Like, there was no change to plot arc or anything like that. It's just, what if you did added a phrase here about this character? What if you just changed this word like this? And it's so hard to find anyone who can do that sort of thing. Copy editors don't really mess with characters. And a lot of the structural editors are all big picture. Getting that midway point where they're sort of, let's just tweak this sentence or tweak that phrase. Finding someone who can do that's a nightmare. So I'm very, very grateful to Wendy for all the work she put into it.
How many sessions did you have together and, you know, how long were they and how were they kind of structured?
We're both fairly chaotic people, so structure might be the wrong word for us. But we would sit down and I think the sessions were scheduled for 5 1-hour sessions, but inevitably we'd be chatting for 2 or 3 hours at a time, going through the manuscript and just talking about writing in general. And we've actually become quite good friends. We meet up for online coffee every few weeks now.
I haven't read the manuscript. I read the beginning of it when it was submitted. Is there a risk with this type of text, which is set so long ago and so far away, that I'm just wondering if it's relatable to for the average reader? You know, what's common in Blind Dragon, do you think, for a young person today?
I mean, a lot of it is learning to grow up and learning to become part of society, but it's also learning to cope when something you love is taken away from you. We've all been there where we've had something we've been good at and all of a sudden you just, for whatever reason, you're not able to do it anymore or you've realized you've hit a limit with it. So it's really that story of overcoming the odds. It's very much that coming of age sort of story underneath the, and like, obviously it's not a setting that's very common. Very few people could do the research for this sort of setting, but it does have that strong coming of age storyline underneath it.
With the research, how did you do that? And did you have any kind of really big standout moments in the research?
Well, my own koto teacher was incredibly helpful. She's 92 and She was one of the last students of the Blind Guild before it was disbanded. So her teachers were all blind masters, and once it was disbanded, she became a teacher because she can see. So it's having conversations with her, and a lot of the anecdotes in the book are actually from her, of how she dealt with her own teachers who, and a lot of them are quite amusing stories. Otherwise, there's a surprising amount available in Japanese journals. Fortunately, because of my profession, I can read historic Japanese, which certainly helped. There's also been quite a lot of interviews with other subject matter experts, particularly, like, I make kimonos because, of course, I do. So I've spoke to my own kimono-making teacher a lot about, well, what would have been worn in this period? What sort of fabrics would these people have used? Again, my tea ceremony friend, she's a massive expert on the architecture of that period and the food used. So that things like that, it's just been a case of using a human network of experts to really get the fine details of the subject matter down. And then a surprising amount of history is available in textbooks if you know where to look.
Yeah. Did you have access to... I'm just thinking when you mentioned food, a novel that I worked on, I was able to actually find newspapers from the time. It was the early 1900s. And so from those newspapers, I could tell what food was being advertised, what was on special at certain markets and things like that, which gave me a lot of insight into that. Did you have that kind of access to that kind of really printed matter of the time?
Yes and no. In some circumstances, yes, I have some access to it. I can access the National Archives of Japan, have an online section, which was quite useful. Having said that, a lot of it is much easier to talk to subject matter experts in Japan than to try and find surviving documents. Just because that period is such a long time ago. A lot of the printed matter that has survived, a lot of them, like particularly novels and things from that period, have been quite helpful because they've got the food listed. And fortunately, Japanese people have sort of the foodies of the East. So we do see records have been kept, but it's easier just to ask tea ceremony people because they've kept all of these traditions and knowledge alive.
From the opening section of the novel that I read, it's I think you've got a list of the cast members to start with. It seemed quite large. I'm just wondering if that was hard to keep that many characters under control.
I think I probably overdid. Like, there's quite a number of characters I could feasibly remove from that list without any ill effect. I think I listed two in that original draft. I think there's too many of the incidental characters listed, which might be a bit scary. I didn't find it too bad at all because I maintain a single perspective throughout the whole novel. So it's really just keeping the orbits around Tsukio intact as I go. So no, I didn't find it particularly difficult. It would, if I'd been chopping and changing between multiple POVs, I think that would have been very difficult.
Yeah, I was going to ask you because the bit I read was from a single point of view. I wondered if you'd kept that through the whole novel.
Yeah, I have tried writing multi POV a few times, and it just doesn't work for me. It just turns into a mess.
Yeah, I think it doesn't work for a lot of people, but.
I will neither confirm nor deny that statement.
Is the manuscript finished now?
Yeah. So it was finished when I submitted it. It just got another layer of editing from Wendy on top. And
so what's the next steps with it then?
Well, at the moment, I've entered it into a few different competitions at the moment. So I'm waiting to hear back from those. And I'm keeping an eye out for good pitching events, and I'm pitching it to publishers. So, fingers crossed, something will come up for it. I'm hoping they might be pitching at the HNSA conference.
Yeah, there is pitching there. So
that sounds like a very good opportunity.
So what are you working on now?
I am starting this. I've just started writing the sequel to Blind Dragon. The working title is Silent Tiger, actually. And that's sort of set a couple of years at the end after Blind Dragon is finished, but it has the same cast. I'm also writing a couple of middle grade fantasies at the moment as well. One is a sequel to something I've previously written that I'm looking to get published right now. And then I've got another new idea that I'm working on, and the book going into publication. I've written the whole series of that already, actually, but I haven't quite finished editing the later books, so there's a bit of editing going on at the moment too.
Goodness, that's quite a full program.
I am insane. We have established this.
To finish up tonight, where did your love of Japan come from? What's that seeded from?
My mother was actually one of the very first Japanese teachers of Queensland. So where did it come from is more, it's always been here. I grew up with Japanese in the house. My home is littered with Japanese artifacts everywhere. So it really just is part of who I am. I might not have Japanese citizenship, but there is a part of me that is very Japanese.
So was your mother a Japanese teacher in Australia?
Yes, one of the very first. So she's well and truly retired now, of course. But she was one of the initial group that started teaching back in the 70s. The program she started at her first school is still going strong all these years later.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time tonight. And I've enjoyed our little chat.
Any time. I hope it was helpful and coherent.
Yeah, well, hopefully it inspires people to enter the mentorship program next time we run it.
The mentorship was a life-changing experience for me as a writer. Wendy was a fantastic mentor. I really think it gave that work the polish it needed to get over the line. And I'm very confident that a publisher will pick it up now.
Well, that's high praise for Wendy, and good luck for you. I hope it turns out.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you for listening to Imagining the Past, the 2025 season. Please remember to step back in time to our podcast archive, where you'll find a wealth of interviews. And it's festival year, History Unbound, to be held at Parramatta Town Hall on the 1st and 2nd of November. 2025. Both in-person and online tickets are available. Please visit our website www.hnsa.org.au, register for our newsletter, and join our social media groups to be up to date. I'm Greg Johnston. Keep reading, keep listening, and keep imagining the past. Imagining the Past is commercial free. HNSA is a volunteer-run, not-for-profit organisation, and we can only continue to produce the podcast with your support. Please consider making a tax-deductible donation through our secure website, www.hnsa.org.au. All contributions, great or small, are greatly appreciated.